It was a senseless, brutal murder.
This is Laura Schofer, a 60-year-old, recently retired community journalist, playwright, and novelist. Laura was a reporter on the South Shore of Long Island for more than 20 years. She retired last spring. Here, she remembers covering the story of a brutal murder by a man from out of state that left two Long Island women dead.
The police department did let me listen to a 911 tape of this young man who had committed this terrible crime. He had called a few weeks before. He had been so desperate, he was thinking of committing suicide. And it was the call that he made to the police department. And you can hear the terror and the pain in his voice. And I felt very sorry for him, that he was in such a terrible place. And then he did this very, very terrible, terrible thing. And he really ripped these holes in the universe, and these poor young women, these beautiful young women, lost their lives. All of it is a tragedy. All of it is so terrible. It doesn't make what he did right by any stretch of the imagination. Or I'm not saying that he did anything that was right. It's just how terrible that he was so wounded. I didn't write the story from the point of view that he was a victim, but it was in my mind and in my consciousness when I wrote the story to try to be more balanced.
This is In the Field. Laura greeted me at the front door of her tutor for our interview a couple months ago, with a finger saving her place in a book she'd been reading. She's all of 5'7" and impeccably dressed, with short brown hair. We worked together at this community newspaper for 2 years together, and she had an unspoken reputation around the office for being a good listener. She made people feel heard. I don't know if it's her comforting voice or any combination of the things I just described, but Laura carries around the ambiance of a 5-star hotel. She says things like,
I've never been afraid, ever. I'm not afraid. I'm not going to let anyone make me afraid.
And
high school was high school. It was neither good nor bad. It just was.
Okay.
It was a means to an end.
It's never pretentious, but can be completely disarming if you're not ready for her pleasantness, like a surprise encounter with the Queen. Laura has worked in community journalism specifically longer than anyone else I know. She originally set out to be a novelist and playwright, which she has also succeeded at. But as it turned out, being a student of humanity and even just being a writer served her journalism career just as well.
I wanted to live the life of an artist, but life has a way of kind of taking you on its own journey, and it's actually much better than what I had envisioned for myself. My life has been much fuller. I've had many more experiences, and it's been a very worthwhile journey.
The journey of Laura's life, however, began some 4,000 miles from New York, in Bologna, Italy. She was born in 1956. Her father was Italian, and her mother's family was Venezuelan and Argentinian. The first language she learned how to speak was Italian, and she learned some Spanish, but ultimately settled on English.
I spent a great deal of time with my Spanish-speaking grandmother, and that also was a little confusing because I was running around with these three languages bouncing around in my head.
She immigrated to the U.S. as a small child a few years after her birth. Though she was young, she said she remembers that it was difficult to learn English and find a place for herself. She attended Massapequa High School, where she met her future husband, Andrew. And when it came time to decide where to go to college and begin envisioning plans for her adult life, she set her sights on Wheaton College in Massachusetts, which, at the time, was an all-girls school.
I wanted to go to a women's college because I wanted to be in an academic environment where I did not have to compete with men, where women were the whole show and the only show. There were none of the sexual politics that would be in a co-ed school. I like women. I enjoy their company. I like their support. I like the way they communicate with each other. If you wanted to be a science major and spend all your time in the lab doing, you know, genetic research, you could. And I spent many, many hours locked away writing and pursuing my interests with absolutely no feeling of not being able to achieve my goals.
She graduated from Wheaton in 1978 and enrolled at New York University, where she earned her MFA in dramatic writing.
Unfortunately, publishing didn't pay very well, and I ended up in public relations, and I did industrial and corporate public relations, which was disastrous for me. It just didn't suit my personality.
The first grumble of journalism in Laura's world came when Jimmy Breslin spotted her at a press conference, and he noticed that she was uncomfortable.
Shortly before I decided to leave the field, I was at a press conference, and after the press conference, Jimmy Breslin came up to me and he said to me, "Hey kid, looks like you don't have the stomach for this. I think you're playing for the wrong team."
She later took other artistic jobs closer to the heart. She worked in feminist theater companies, wrote plays, and worked on her books. Her first journalism job came by accident when she learned of an opportunity to write for a Freeport arts newspaper called The Art Scene.
I was writing about things that interested both the public and artists. For example, I was writing about how to get health insurance, toxic products that painters might use, how to find funding, what would be the typical lifestyle of someone who makes their living creating, you know, 8-foot sculptures. What are the challenges for women composers?
That gig led to another, this time in community journalism.
It was very different. It was a lot of fun. It was a new challenge. I was very lucky because when I was hired to work in community journalism, I had a writing partner, and she was a professional journalist from Manila in the Philippines, and she had worked for the Manila Times. She couldn't get a job working for a major newspaper. My publisher hired her, and she was wonderful. She really taught me what it was to be a journalist. It opened up my world for me in just innumerable ways. And then I had the opportunity to meet all kinds of people and to hear all kinds of stories. And it made my work as a writer richer and more varied. Both as a novelist and as a playwright, you know, you observe people, how they looked, how they act, the way they move their bodies, their living environment, you know, where they live. Hopefully there are other people there with them, how they interact with other people, the stories they tell. You listen to their cadence, the way they speak. Those are the things I look for. You really want to know what's going on in an office? Go through their garbage. And we did. And a lot of it is being out on the street all the time. I always walked my community every day, a different part of the community. I stop and talk to people every day. It's different now. You can go online. There are all kinds of social networks. There are all kinds of electronic communities. It wasn't like that at all.
She began to notice similarities between fiction writing and journalistic writing. To her, they were merely two different styles of writing about humanity. On the Beat in Freeport, New York, a a community with a high concentration of immigrants. Laura said she was cognizant of the struggle of adapting to a new country because she had done it herself. She said she didn't think her experience was particularly unique, but that it always provided her with a bit of insight and compassion when writing about the subject.
I can remember that some of the very first stories that I did in Freeport about immigration were actually in 1996. That's really the year when a lot of the federal immigration laws began to change. There was a lot more tightening of immigration laws. And one of the very first stories that I did was actually going to some of the centers in Freeport at the time and speaking to people who were literally trying to find out what they were going to do because the laws had changed and how it was going to affect them.
So why did she retire? If she stumbled into this field and loved it so much, why was now the right time to stop? As Laura puts it, she could no longer have two lovers. She'd tried to keep her novels going while she was working in newspapers, but it felt like it was time to make them her only priority. Now, Laura spends most of her time focusing on her next book. She's still following the news closely. She scans through a print edition of the New York Times each night.
And I decided that it was time to go back to my novels. I've put a lot of years into journalism. I think that I've given it what I can. I think it's time for other people. And this is my time. This is my time to work on my novels and perhaps go back to writing plays. Well, what I try to do is I try to do what they call automatic writing in the morning, where I don't edit anything that I write. I just write and write and write. And I do that for about 2 hours. I do that in like 20, 25 minute breaks, sections. Then I go back to it later in the day and I actually write out. I look at what I've done and I actually write it out and make it into some kind of form. And then I go back a little bit later in the day one more time for just an additional hour. And I think about what I want to do the next day and where I want to take the work. So that's basically how I do it. I don't worry about noise. I've worked in the newsroom for too many years. I never think about it. I do not, you know, I try to focus on my work during the day. So even though I've always been an avid news hound, I do that at night now instead of in the morning because I get too aggravated and too distracted.
If you're a journalist or even a casual reader of the news, you'll have noticed the widespread fear playing out on the world stage right now. And in many cases, rightly so. There are plenty of reasons to feel sad or angry or afraid. But maybe it's just shaping us for whatever comes next. Maybe it's only a means to an end. It's never been easy to be a journalist, but we live in a distinctly chaotic world right now. The trajectory of Laura's career, like plenty of other reporters we've spoken to on this podcast, should remind us that there are no accidents. It's hard to ask Laura about challenges she's faced in her life, because she doesn't look at it that way. To her, the experiences we live through, the people we encounter, all of it shapes who we become.
I'm absolutely terrified to fly, and I didn't fly for many years. After 9/11, the world changed. The man who lived next door was a New York City fireman next door to my home when I was living in Baldwin. He worked for the hazmat unit for the New York City Fire Department. And during 9/11, he was on leave because he had some kind of an injury. And most of the men in his unit perished because hazmat is one of the first that's called on the scene for something like that. And I believe it was about a year later, and he dropped dead. And I realized that at that moment that, you know, if you're going to die, you're going to die. You're going to die. He wasn't meant to die on 9/11, but he died in his own home on a Sunday morning in front of his family. My husband came to me and he said to me, it's important to me. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to fly with you places, and I really want to go. I had an epiphany and I just decided that I was going to do it. It was so hard that the first time I flew, after not having flown for about 13, 14 years, I broke out in full body hives. But I was going to get on that plane. I decided I was going to get on that plane whether it killed me or not. And it almost killed me. Believe me, full body hives is, you know, from the neck down. And every time I fly, I'm afraid. But I do it anyway because I'm not going to let any dragon take me down.
All right, everyone, that is it. Many thanks to all who have listened and commented this season. I'd also like to thank our guests one last time, Micah, Katie, Sharif, Jessica, Johnny, and Laura. Thank you for letting me interview you. Thanks to the lovely and talented Brooke Vitisi of Gem Studios for helping me craft and master that bitchin' theme song. This episode also featured music by Dick Hyman and Rafiki. If you liked listening and would like to hear more in the future, please rate us on iTunes and subscribe to our podcast wherever you can. I'm Nick Chacon, and this has been In the Field.